From historic Seminary Ridge in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, this is The Seminary Explores. Conversations about people, politics, theology, and life with your host, Dr. Gerald Christensen.
Monasticism, or the monastic movement, or monks in the modern world. What are their roles and what are their purposes? Hello, I'm Jerry Christensen, and this is The Seminary Explores. Our guest today is actually an old friend with a new name. He is Father Jude of St. Augustine's Lutheran Monastery in Oxford, Michigan, and we're going to talk about monasticism, the monk, the monastic movement in modern life. A word of explanation about St. Augustine's House. Their mission statement claims that they are the congregation of the servants of Christ, and it is an ecumenical Christian community whose life of discipleship is inspired and shaped by the holy rule of Saint Benedict. A word about that later on. We, the mission statement says, identify with the Lutheran tradition, understood as a movement within and for the one holy Catholic and Apostolic Church of Jesus Christ. We are committed to the growth of the permanent resident community, to the pursuit of ecumenical understanding, and to the provision of retreats for members of the Fellowship of St. Augustine and others. We seek to serve the whole church by our life of prayer and by the use of our facilities. I think that last statement is one we're going to concentrate on more. The life of prayer and the use of our own facilities. Tell us about St. Augustine's, Father Jude.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Christensen. I'm glad to be here. And the life at St. Augustine's House is one that is modeled after the earliest developments in monasticism, going all the way back even into the 3rd century. We are a Benedictine monastery, so we follow the rule of St. Benedict. And there are three parts to our day. One is the prayer, and that is mainly centered on the daily office, which I'll explain a little bit more detail. And reading, studying in the nature of a spiritual materials and church history and theology, and actual physical work. We pray each day in the little chapter meeting prayer that God will prosper the work of our hands. So one part of the day is actually spent in doing some kind of physical labor. Now, the first part, the prayers. The daily office. The daily office is a schedule of prayers in the church, in community, and it starts at 5:10 in the morning with vigils, and then proceeds at 6 o'clock to Lauds, and then at 8:15 we have terse, which is a shorter form of the prayers. Then we say Mass at 8:30. We have a full Mass at 8:30. Then we have our chapter meeting, and that too has a format where we say some prayers and we confess our faith in the words of the Apostles' Creed. Then at noon we have sext, then at 2:30 nones, then at 6 p.m. is vespers, and the day ends at 8:30 p.m. with compline. Most of the content of these prayer services, most of the content of daily office, concentrates on the reading of the Psalms. And in the morning at vigils, we actually read psalms. We take turns reading a set of 8 psalms out loud. Each one of us takes our turn reading those psalms. And then we have 4 and 4. We have a 4 to begin with, and then we have a break where we read from the Old Testament. And I'm the lector for vigils, so I read from the Old Testament. And then at the end, we have another reading, and the prior, Father Richard, reads from some kind of, right now we're reading St. John Climacus, The Ladder of Divine Ascent. Sometimes on a saint's day, for instance, yesterday was, now, of course, I've drawn a blank as to what it was yesterday.
You can make one up because you got one for every day of the year just about. So.
Well, I know St. Basil's coming up on
okay.
Saturday.
All right, use that one.
But in the morning, then, he may read
something from St. Basil.
A piece of St. Basil's, something from one of his sermons.
But you could also read something contemporary?
Well, sometimes Father John Cochran, Father John will read when Father Richard is away for some reason. Father John reads, and he read from Dietrich Bonhoeffer's
Yes,
I figured, Life Together, yeah. And that was very good too. Yeah. But the point is,
readings
then,
are
then there's, yeah. there's a series of readings. But then the rest of the time we're chanting, and Father Richard has studied Gregorian chant, and he's written the chants following the traditional Gregorian chant. Notation and everything. So most of the rest of the time we're chanting the Psalms. And then at Mass, of course, is just what people know as a communion service or the standard service of the Church. And there we have intercessory prayer, and we mm-hmm. have the first lesson and the gospel lesson and a full Eucharist. But mostly what it's about is praying the Psalms. Mm-hmm. Going all the way back, yeah. all the way back to the Old Testament, yeah, and of yeah. course, speaking of Bonhoeffer, his thesis was that these are the prayers that Jesus prayed. This is how Jesus prayed. He mm-hmm. used the Psalter. Mm-hmm. So that's what we're doing, and that takes up, as you heard from the schedule, that takes up a pretty good chunk of the day,
yeah.
the time of the day, and. And then the next part of it is the spiritual reading.
Right.
The reading, and that's done private. That's done on your own privately. Although I'm a novice right now. I started my novitiate on Epiphany, the eve of Epiphany at the beginning of this year. So I will go, my novitiate will go till next year. Next January is Epiphany. Mm-hmm. A year and a day mm-hmm. is the tradition for that. And so we will start this having, we start to have classes already on alternate Wednesday afternoons to discuss some of our readings. But the idea is that you spend time reading the scriptures, reading the church fathers, reading theological works, and reading in history of monasticism. I've been studying recently the edition that came out for the Rule of Benedict, the 1980. It's called RB 1980. In 1980, the Benedictines, the Roman Catholic Benedictines, spearheaded a movement to make a new translation to honor the 1500th anniversary of St. Benedict's rule.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a wealth of information that they've included, not just the text itself in English and Latin, but they also had a number of essays, including a very nice historical summary of about 150 pages or so that Father Timothy Hay wrote for that. And that's one of the things that I've been reading.
Good.
And so that covers the daily office, the prayers, then the spiritual reading, and then the third part is the work of our hands.
Okay.
And for me, what I do for the community is two things that I do. One is preparing meals. I'm one of the two main cooks now. Father Richard and Father John also cook, but Brother Clement, who's another novice, and I are the ones who do most of the cooking.
Mm-hmm.
And that's two meals a day. Breakfast, everybody's on their own, but the noon meal, dinner, and the evening meal, supper, we prepare those and including for the guests. So sometimes I can be preparing a meal for as few as 5 or 6 people or as many as 15 people, depending on how many guests we have or what's going on in the community. And that's something I kind of fell into. I don't have any formal training as a cook, although Brother Clement does. He was a professional chef for a hotel chain in Jacksonville, Florida, some mm-hmm. years ago. So he has that experience that he brings, and I've learned a lot from him, a lot of tricks and things to do to keep get the meal ready. And the other thing that I do is I have a passion for woodworking, and when I came there, I brought all my woodworking tools along, and the great Father Richard graciously provided me space. I have about 200 square feet in a room adjacent to their two-car garage, and I've been in the process of making it into a workshop for myself and my tools, but not just for myself, but for the whole community to organize the tools and have a space where they can do repairs on things like the tractor or other pieces of furniture in the guest house or the residence. I've also constructed a table, a mail table, where we sort the mail and everybody has their own slot.
Okay.
And I made a small caddy to hold the numbers that you put up on the hymn board, and they were all Father Richard was quite impressed because I carved the sort of the logo of the monastery is a cross that has it's a broken cross. It's not a solid figure of a cross. It's got the center portion is got breaks on either side, so it's a very distinctive looking logo, and I put that on the this numbers caddy. So the woodworking is my contribution in terms of the prospering the work of my hands.
We're talking to Father Jude of St. Augustine's Lutheran Monastery in Oxford, Michigan, about the role of monasticism, especially a Lutheran monastery, in the modern world. I'm Jerry Christensen. You're listening to the Seminary Explorers. I'm wondering if we could spend profitably the second half of our show, Father Jude, in talking about how you chose this vocation. And I can start that by saying when I knew you before this broadcast, you were the Reverend Donald Motaka. You're an ordained Lutheran minister with a limited license now, but nevertheless a Lutheran trained. What on earth, if I may be blunt, what on earth is a Lutheran doing in a monastery? How did you come to this vocation?
Well, the first question is, what's a Lutheran doing in a monastery? And of course, as we just discussed, the main thing he's doing is praying, is he's being faithful to the call that God gives to us all, and which the apostles wrote down in the
pray book without Acts. Ceasing.
Pray continually, and pray for. For everybody, not just yourself, but for the whole world.
Your work then is prayer for yourself and for the world. I mean, people will say, "What's your job? What are you doing for the world?" Well, we're praying. And the assumption is that without that prayer, the world might collapse. You know, there is that assumption in some of the ancient fathers.
Well, yes, and
it's a little hard to believe that in the modern turn, but that's what they thought.
No, and Benedict is very clear in his rule that the Opus Dei, the work of God, is the most important thing, and everything else that you do is just as important. But that is the central.
Work there means prayer. It also means reading and physical labor. But the Opus Dei is prayer.
Is the work
prayer
of when
Opus.
He says Opus Dei, he means the daily office. The regular drum, I call it the drum beat, the regular drum beat of meeting together as a community and praying the psalms and saying the intercessory prayers and having time for concentrating on that calling that God gives to us to pray continually.
Do you literally pray for other people in your prayers specifically and generally? During the day, people you know.
When I come into the church to sit down in my choir stall, and I get out my daily office book, I usually say the Jesus prayer, Lord Jesus Christ, Son of the Living God, have mercy on me, a sinner. But then I continue on, have mercy on my mother, have mercy on Dr. Christensen, have mercy on people, and I name specific people at every session. At every office, I have a different list
of people.
But then in the Mass, of course, in the intercessories, we're invited. We have written petitions that we read as part of the liturgy, but we also have space in that intercessory prayer to name people or institutions. I often pray for my home congregation, St. James Lutheran here in Gettysburg, and I pray for Pastor Fritz Foltz's two son-in-laws. I pray for their congregations.
People who are ill that you know.
We have a standard list of people who are sick, and that's a competition, but we're welcome to add our own. So, yes, I pray specifically for people. But the next part of your question is, how did I get there? Mm-hmm. You know, what am I doing there as a Lutheran, and how did I come to be there? I had been a Lutheran pastor for 6 years. The last 3.5 I'd spent in the inner city Philadelphia, and of course that's where I came to know John Cochran, Father John now. He has been in residence there. He's been a professed brother, which is what will be the next step for me after my novitiate ends in this coming January. I will become a professed brother. Father John's been a professed brother for now almost going on 7 years. And so I'd gone up to St. Augustine's a couple of years ago just to visit with him and just to spend some time to figure out what I was going to do with the rest of my life after my job. And I'd gotten into the computer industry and the information technology, and my job had expired along with most of the economy there in a few years.
Along with your interest in that field probably, too, in a sense. Yeah, that expired. You wanted something new, a new adventure.
I went there mainly just to think about, you know, try to get myself together and figure out how to move on.
Oh.
And as I was there, I started to think about, you know, what they were doing. I saw what the community was doing. And, of course, I had long conversations with Father John. And then I went back again about 2 or 3 months later for another week. And at the end of that period, I asked, you know, I sat down and talked with him and Father Richard about, you know, how do I explore further my understanding of what the community is about and what the monastic life is about, and it brought back to me why I first went into the ministry in the first place, the experiences I had growing up here in Gettysburg, the care, the pastoral care that I received from Ed Kaiser and Fritz Foltz and the whole community at St. James, and my decision originally to go into the ministry to give back something that I felt had been given to me, and that I had some talents and skills that could be used in the work of the ministry.
Mm-hmm.
So all that kind of came back to me as I was spending time at St. Augustine's house. And then the process that you go through is you spend a month or so of what they call discernment there. So a year ago, this past January, I spent the month of January, and Father Richard laughed and said, "Oh, if you can make it through January,"
in Central,
he said, "January would be." Yeah, he said, "We'll find out when you really can hack it here if you spend January with us." And he wasn't far wrong, although it was nothing like it this past year. It was very cold, and it did snow a good deal while I was there. But I spent a month there, and I thought the hardest thing would be to get used to that drum beat, the daily office, and not get bored with it or get fidgety. And somehow, there are times, of course. I mean, everybody goes through a period
of
where you sort of sit there and you know, your mind wanders and everything. But overall, after a while, once you do it enough, it becomes something that really, I don't know, that it creates a space in your life for thinking about things at a much different, a much deeper level than we normally do. And then, of course, it is a ministry. It is a service. You know, the prayer life that we pursue there is for the good of the world. It is manifesting the Holy Spirit in a very real way in the life of the whole community. We have people from the local community come to worship on Sunday. We have friends and neighbors. There's neighbors who come by all the time, sometimes to help us with things and sometimes to be helped, who come for the prayers, and mm-hmm. and we have guests, mm-hmm. not just the people who are on the roll as members of the Fellowship of St. Augustine, right. but just people, friends of theirs who they've recommended to come, pastors who bring members of their congregation. We get a lot. We get any number of church council or lay leadership plan, mm-hmm. wanting some space and time to make long term plans and yep. have a retreat like yep. that, all within the context of the daily office and the daily Eucharist and the silence.
Before we go, and we've only got 1 minute, so this is the sort of thing that Mike Wallace used to do, is ask the hardest questions last and say you've only got 30 seconds. But the listeners to this program would certainly be emailing me immediately if I didn't ask whether or not you are aware that Luther did reject monasticism, and kind of how you are the only Lutheran monastery, you said, in the Northern Hemisphere.
North America.
In North
yeah.
America, probably around the world as far as not quite. But it's unusual.
Yes.
So how do you answer that, that criticism? And you got to do this in 30 seconds.
Okay. Well, first thing is, if you're going to talk about Martin Luther, he certainly was running contrary to much of what was going on in his world now, wasn't he?
Yes. Yes, I would say.
You can say that his ideas about what needed to happen in the Roman Catholic Church weren't exactly what the prescribed details or what the prescribed course would be. So I kind of feel like I'm being true to the spirit. We're being true to
just being contrary. You're a true Lutheran being contrary.
But his criticisms, we take those very seriously. And one of the things, the main thing that we think we're providing, I'd like to think that Luther might shrug and say, well, okay, we'll give you a dispensation for this one. Mm-hmm. That we are true, just as he was, to the real, you know, what the Apostles' Creed says, the one holy Catholic and Apostolic Church. We are serving the Church. We're not wealthy. We don't mix in the politics. We are not in the machinations of the Holy See or whatever. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So all those kinds of things are gone by, and the point is that we are true to what mm-hmm. is originally the calling of the monk. And of course, you know, the other thing that has to be said is, you mean Martin Luther, the monk?
Yeah.
Now, of course, he was an Augustinian and not a Benedictine.
And he was not, right? But they followed the Benedictine rule in the sense that everybody
did. There was something really radically wrong that couldn't be right. You know, if there's something, you know, his point was, there's something radically wrong with the church that we need to fix. So we say, well, okay, so maybe there's, so you point out there's something radically wrong with monasticism, yeah. and we like to think that we're the fix.
The Father Jude of the St. Augustine's Lutheran Monastery in Oxford, Michigan, has been our guest today about the role of monks, monasteries, and monasticism in the modern world. I'm Jerry Christensen. For the Seminary Explorers, have a very good day.
You've been listening to The Seminary Explores from historic Seminary Ridge in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, a production of the Lutheran Theological Seminary at Gettysburg. We invite you to visit our website at www.ltsg.edu. All opinions expressed on this program are those of the individual speakers and are not necessarily those of Gettysburg Seminary or the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America.